This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
It is 43 minutes past 12. Let's get into this conversation around understanding South Africa's new gender-based violence laws. Let's welcome into this conversation GBVF's Response Fund CEO, Lindiwe Dlamini. Lindiwe, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Hi, thank you, Faith, and thank you for having me. Hello to the listeners out there.
I think more than anything else, can you just break down what these new laws actually mean? Just touch base with the what do we need to know and understand as a society of where we were before to where we are right now?
I think the most critical changes. Let me first highlight 33 pieces of legislation. The first one on criminal and related matters allows for children and people with mental disabilities to give evidence through intermediaries. You can imagine one of the difficulties in attaining justice is facing this justice system. And for a long time, children haven't been able to give evidence. And as a parent, you don't want to subject your child to secondary victimization. The ability to understand those processes is sometimes limited by that. And so the ability to give evidence through an intermediary, the ability to give evidence through electronic media is critical to that. And then the second one is the Criminal Law Sexual Offences Amendment Act, which really goes into new definitions for sexual intimidation, includes mentally disabled people, extends the list of persons who are protected in terms of the act and who may be availed of the special circumstances through which they can give evidence. And then critically, the Domestic Violence Amendment Act, what is great about it is, for instance, you no longer have to appear in person to get a protection order. You will have the ability to apply for a protection order online, and you will be able to get a protection order 24 hours, including on weekends. And that's significant because a lot of women who are abused are mostly at risk in the evenings, over the weekends. So the fact that they will no longer have to get up and go to an SAPS station to get a protection order and find themselves having to wait for Monday, having to take time off work, having to spend money on transport to get to the SAPS. So these are significant changes and a progressive step forward in helping to protect women. And the whole notion of secondary victimization is a critical thing we're looking to overcome. Access and a victim-centered approach to dispensation of the criminal justice system in this instance. The SAPS will have the power where they believe that an abuser is preventing access to premises where there is a complainant. They will have a right to respond immediately. They will have a right to arrest the respondent immediately. And a court will be in a position to issue a protection order without needing the subject of the order to respond to the proceedings or to be given notice of the proceedings because of the immediacy and the risk that the complainant will be in. So if they're in imminent danger, they can get that protection order immediately. Yeah. So all of these, I mean, if you look back at what people complain about, and what people find difficult, where they don't find protection. We've seen so many people killed, and they say, I had gone and reported. I'd gone to the police station to get a protection order. It didn't come. And then the SAPs themselves, if they don't act in keeping with what is required of them in this legislation, they'll be guilty of misconduct and action can be taken against them. And you know the stories where you
we know the stories, yeah. Lindy.
They intermediate. They are now
And then they become a family counselor at the police station.
There
we know.
There you go. So really, it is a significant milestone that we as the GBVF Response Fund celebrate. This is, after all, our anniversary week. The fund was launched on the 4th of February, 2021. Friday is our anniversary. This is a gift because it's a significant milestone and step forward. And as always, Gethsaida, the devil's in the detail. There are still regulations that need to be enacted to tell us how exactly is this online facility that will be used, for instance, to submit a request for a protection order going to work? What platform? Is it going to be zero rated? All those things are important because access, you can't have data being an impediment to access when this has now been availed. So there's a bit of detail that needs to emerge through the supporting regulations that are yet to go through the lawmaking process. But it's very clear that there's going to have to be a lot of unlearning and relearning. And SAPS has already been on a path of training around provisions such as this that define their roles in a far more strong way in terms of their role as per the legislation, rather than, you know, the one that they give themselves, where perpetrators call them, for instance, and say, negotiate with the person to withdraw the complaint and so forth.
No, I get, definitely hear you on that. I mean, you're speaking about the devil being in the details. So one maybe detail that is also concerning is around a child that has been abused or a child that's been a victim of a sexual offense, right? Those that get to report, the reporting duty, from what we understand, is that it's increased to those who suspect that the child is a victim of a sexual offense. But now it's extended to who? Is it extended to the family member? Is it extended to me as a neighbor? If I as a neighbor see Malumewa next door is doing something, am I now able to go and get Malume arrested as a third party looking into this next door? And how far does the arm then support me in reporting, you know what I'm saying, in reporting a case? Because I'm not the mother, I'm not the father. Let's say it's happening in the home where the father's doing it to the child and the mother's keeping quiet. Can I as the neighbor now go and report that the father in this house or next door is doing such and such and such to a child, and will they take my testimony against what's going on in the house?
If you are reasonably informed and you have reasonable knowledge that a child is in danger, you are obliged to report now. How come on next door? If you are an adult and this is within your personal knowledge, and they have to take that on board and investigate and take the matter forward. And I mean, this is the whole thing because, Faith, if you think about it, like one of the impediments that we see is in a cycle of abuse, everybody gets caught in the abuse within the household. And then everybody else, next door, you know, it's as other people's things. And this is how the problem keeps perpetuating and sustaining. So this is to say we all have a constitutional responsibility for the country that we want to have when it comes to the safety of women, children, the elderly, and mentally disabled persons. I'm also just delighted about the protections that have been extended to elderly people and mentally disabled persons, because this cancer, I mean, all the way from pedophilia, but there's also abuse of the mentally disabled. There's also abuse of the elderly, and they are deserving of protection. And so for me, it's good that the ecosystem has got responsibility and that these laws recognize the need to protect those categories of persons. But yes, you do have to face it. You can no longer stand by and say,
yeah, no, that thing is what it continues to make the problem persist. If you're an individual or you're an organization that's working with victims, and I like calling them survivors of gender-based violence, and you'd like to engage with Lindi Dlamini on it, 0861-987-000. Maybe it's about information funding. I mean, these are the guys that deal also with the fund. So if you want information about how to capacitate maybe your organization, how to work with the woman, what to do, if you need maybe insight around getting getting access to the fund, getting access to resource 0861987000. While I've got her online, let's make sure we can maximize our time with her so that you as an organization as well can do it. Yeah. You know, it really is it's a huge issue. But talk to us about funding now, Lindiwe. There are many organizations that actually deal with gender-based violence, and many of them are doing it even informally. A few women or men were thought, you know what, this situation is wrong. We're going to create an informal setup of a safe haven, so as it were. So whatever's happening, the victim or the survivor can run to a house and then they feel safe. If they want access in terms of resourcing better capacity, how do they do it? How do you guys now come in and help with that route?
Sure. And, you know, one of the things that I must say in the context of both the legislation as well as the GBVF Response Fund and why we exist, I must acknowledge the role of civil society. Civil society militated around this issue and called for the president's attention. That's where we had a presidential summit. That's where the notion of legislative amendments and so forth came about. But also that's where the whole notion that this fight to win the war against gender-based violence and femicide, it cannot be won without resourcing and capacitation. Because as you rightly point out, there are a lot of people on the ground who are moved by the plight of people that they see in their communities, who are responsive in the time of need of survivors in the community, who become aware of the killing of women within their community. They didn't set off saying, as a business, I want to have a community-based organization. No, they start off responding to what's in their community. So as the GBVF Response Fund, what we did last year, not long after coming into existence, we put out a call for proposals. We got proposals. We subjected them to a rigorous vetting process, which culminated in us approving a funding of $69 million to 110 such organizations across the country. And in that adjudication process, we prioritized a number of things that we had heard from civil society when we reaffirmed our mandate as soon as the fund was launched. The first was that we need to ensure that there is sufficient funding for organizations in rural areas. As a result, 60% of the funding that we have approved has been deployed in rural areas or informal settlements. The second thing was to ensure that there is a sufficient spread of resources across provinces. There are provinces that have been neglected from a funding perspective, and yet they continue to see an increase in the incidence of gender-based violence and femicide. Your Eastern Cape, KZN, Mpumalanga, Limpopo. We did that as part of this mandate. The next thing is the GBVF hotspots. There are a number of so-called hotspots, and they're defined as hotspots by the SAPS based on the incidents, not only of reporting, but of actual incidents on the ground. Within that process, we engaged with experts on the ground, and we said there is this list of 30 that the SAPS has listed based on an incidence of reporting, and we got on-the-ground information on where others are, which have a high incidence, but not necessarily a high level of reporting. And we know that there are various reasons why people don't report.
Yeah.
And so we periodically then put out these calls for proposals. For now, we are closed. We are focusing on paying out those that we have approved, the 110, and making sure that they are deploying their services and they are running their programs. We have named all of those organizations under the grant partners section of our website. Our website is gbvfresponsefund1.org. That is where we will publish. If we have a call for proposals and we are opening another window, that is where we would publish it. That's where you get information on whether there is an organization near you that we have funded and where you can get assistance. But we've also listed Tutuzela Care Centers and other resources where you can get support if you're looking for information around this. And the Tutuzela Care Centers must be commended for the work that they do, providing survivors with support all the way from when they report that they have been violated, all the way through to prosecution, and they help increase the rate of successful prosecution of offenders. And so I must commend them on that.
So, yeah. So Lindy, but then are you going to be able to open up that next window for proposals anytime soon?
It's not going to be anytime soon because, as I say, we approved the current grant partnership on the 1st of December.
Okay.
Right now we are busy paying those 110. So it's a little too soon. We also have to see what we learn. And I've got a begging bowl out. So any corporates that are listening, we need funding. So that's the only reason, to be honest, Faith. We started off saying we're going to fund for 1 year. Then we said, no, man, these organizations need to be able to sustain their activities over 2 years. We are trying to do capacity building work. We're trying to ensure that they are sustainable. And we approve them as multi-year, so over 2 years, with a review after 1 year, which we thought was more sustainable, was better, and enables these organizations to have peace of mind around a source of funding, at least for a two-year window. So now we as the fund need more money so that we can open this window. So as I say, any corporates that are listening, people from philanthropic organizations, we need the funds now.
Well, you're very well articulate, so trust you me. I bet you somebody's listening. Look, I like the fact that you guys are in this work in terms of being able to assist, you know, some of the survivors. Mm. We can never take, I mean, to be known as one of the country with the highest rate of femicide, it's not nice. It's not nice.
I mean, and how does that sit side by side with having the most progressive constitution in the world?
Exactly. I'm going to take Makosonke Jabulani. Hi, Makosonke, you can add your voice.
Yes, Faith, I must say that I do support the bills to be passed. However, I'm a bit concerned in a situation whereby, I used to have feelings of depression, mm-hmm. rejection, and inferiority always overwhelm me. Mm-hmm. However, I had an intervention that made me realize there is no need for me to be emotionally out of control. Mm. So now, for me, the bills, I don't see the balance that actually culminate with the intervention that I had, and I am concerned that now we are creating a situation whereby we're going to lock up all of people.
So we're going to lock them up instead of giving them help. You're raising an interesting.
I'm saying that there should be a balance.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I hear you.
I'm not excusing the fact that the law should take its course.
Yeah, but you're saying some people are sick. Some people are genuinely sick. I got you. And this is a conversation why we need to keep talking about it, but time is not on our side for now. We're going to have to leave it there. Lindy Wetlamini, always a pleasure. GBVF Response Fund CEO, just giving us the latest in terms of what does this bill, right? These amendments, what do they mean? And how does it affect you?
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.